Richman Ghia is not just building a business, he's building a new way to work. As the co-founder of Coconut VA, George is reimagining how founders scale by blending people, process, and performance. In this episode, we dig into how he's turning the traditional VA model on its head, what he's learned from operating behind the scenes of hundreds of startups, and why systems, not hustle, are the real unlock for growth. This one's for the builders, the operators, and anyone trying to do more with less. I hope you enjoy today's episode of Office Hours.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Office Hours. Before we dive in, I have a quick favor to ask of you. If you're enjoying listening to Office Hours, do you mind taking a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share the podcast with someone who could really benefit from some of our learnings that we talk about together? Your support helps us reach so many more entrepreneurs and business owners, and it helps us keep creating really valuable content because we get more feedback, learn what more people's needs are, and it really just helps us build a community all together. So would really appreciate it. And thank you so, so much.
Hey there, George. How you doing? Thanks so much for joining me.
What's going on, Grace? How are we?
Doing amazing as always. And it's always great to catch up with you, which, you know, doesn't happen enough because in startup world, it's just always a little busy and chaotic. But that's why I'm so excited to have you do this with us.
Me too. I think all of us can say we're all locked in our rooms just coding or building stuff for hours and hours and don't get to see the sunlight. So this is my sunlight and I'm stoked. So let's do it. Amazing.
Well, this will be a quick break before you get back into the cave of working and grinding. So thank you so much for doing this. And for those that don't know George and his company, again, I'm going to give an intro a little bit and we'll include an intro into the business more, but you've built and helped build Coconut VA for the past year or so now, or how long you've been working on Coconut
VA now? Yeah, about a year or so or more.
Yeah. One of the most amazing things that you have built over the last year and, you know, just have learned this from watching you and learning about you and the business and everything has just been understanding some of the really impressive things that you've taught your clients and taught the industry about delegating and scaling and helping grow your business with the use of assistants. This is really specifically useful to anyone that's, you know, in tune with Lucia and that we work with a lot of delegated talent. But I figured from someone that does this all the time with specifically assistants, that we could talk a little bit more about that and talk about operator mode, and how to get out of it.
Cool. Let's do it. I love it. That's been what I've been doing. So I can try to help.
Well, I know that most entrepreneurs, especially me all the time, don't even realize that they're stuck in operator mode necessarily. They just assume that being busy is a part of the process, which is like part of the joke. We banter about like how busy we are and how crazy we are. But being busy isn't just always part of the process. Like what are some of the subtle signs that someone is unknowingly just stuck in this kind of this operator mode?
Yeah, I would say most people say, you know, it's the classic cliche saying of like, I'm working in the business, not on the business, you know? And I think some signs would definitely be you are not willing to give up the tasks and or the projects that you've already hired people for. And or are not willing to outsource in those areas because you're just not good at them. Like I've learned, I feel like over the past few years, I'm just not good at certain things. Like I'm not good at operations in the sense of like the back end operations. I'm good on the front end operations of like making the processes and figuring out how that works. But the execution on the back end is my worst nightmare. So that could look like setting up the Stripe, the incorporation, the QuickBooks. Like I do not want to be in that boomer software. So like I would say for me, it's learning how to systematize and automate the things that you hate. It's the 80-20 rule, right? So like you should look at the 20% where you get the most leverage and just delegate the rest. Delegate the 80% of the tasks that you really suck at, and then see how you can just focus on the higher leverage work.
But for all of the clients that I talk to on a daily basis, the response back that I typically get is I don't want to necessarily let go of that work, or I want to make sure it's perfect, or I want to make sure that it's being done correctly. What's some of your answers to that?
Yeah, that sucks because then you're not going to grow. So like, like get over it. Like, seriously, no, just like get over it. I mean, like if you, there is a beauty of being in the details. I want to emphasize the fact that like, I do have a strong belief in the founder of Airbnb, Brian Chesky. He has a core thesis of still being in the details. So everything is still run past him on a daily basis of any project. And he believes that is empowering the people around him to do better because they know they will, their project that they are now enabling to do themselves and can be autonomous in finishing the project, they still have to show to Brian at the end of the day, right? And get his stamp of approval. So it's going to be 100x better. It's not the micromanagement, but it is optimizing for the best output, right? So I think you can still be in the details but allow people to be autonomous. So just get over it. That's the advice.
Great. End of podcast. Amazing. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. All right. Let's go. Done.
I do think that one of the challenges that we hear a lot, like we said, is that no one can do it as well as they can. Like, what is a tangible way that someone can start letting go? Even if they hear you say like you have to get over it, what is an actionable way that they can start doing that though? Like, what was the way that you started letting people in on the back end operations when you realized you sucked at it?
I think there's two different ways. The first way is if you have capital, and the second way is how I did it. So the first way is if you have capital, I would say go find the people that you admire their work. So like I was not big on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, but I started to really dive into people's work and just what they're building on Twitter. And I really started to admire a few people and like shortlisting them to be like, wow, I would hire them in the future ever in the next 5 to 10 years because they are just so good at what they do. They would do it 10,000 times better than I would. And I can just see it. I don't need to like look at a resume. I could just see it because they're just doing it and they're really fast at doing it. That would be someone I would trust, right? Is like, I could see their work tangibly. Secondarily, the way that I did it, right? So like, we do not necessarily maybe have like those people that you could pay $200,000, $300,000 a year. So then it's figuring out how do I like it done? And then how do I make a systematized process to then delegate that to somebody to start learning how to do it and then make them autonomous and empower them to be autonomous? So for me, tangible way to do that is I take Loom videos of how I do a process every single time. I audibly say what I'm doing, how I would like it done, and how to execute that project. And then I make an SOP using ChatGPT from the transcript of the Loom video. So I copy and paste in ChatGPT and say, make into actual process for employee. And then I hand that off to one of our virtual assistants on our team to then go execute. And they know exactly what to do. And it empowers them to be more autonomous with that role. And just, I always say, loop me in. If you ever need anything, just loop me in. But now they're, you know, after we have this huge database of like all these SOPs, really you can just, they're a lot more empowered. One, to now they create their own SOPs when they do a process, which is awesome. So I don't have to worry about it anymore. And two, like they have a whole database and now 100 other people they can go ask for help as well.
How did you get them into the routine of recording their own SOPs? Because that's a new level. Like it's great to require that of yourself, but it's an even better stance to have like your team members are like taking those SOPs.
Yeah,
is it a culture thing? Did you just say it and they listened?
Yeah, honestly, it was kind of more just a culture thing. It's like I had to say that over and over for like a week or two. And Tyler and I really talked about that. Was like, hey, how do we start kind of dog fooding our own processes and then just building a stack that is like our data moat in a way of how we do things? And then we just said, hey, at the end of every week and at the beginning of every week, look at what you have to do and then what you have done for that week. If anything was really repetitive, then just do what we've done. So here's how you would make it in ChatGPT. Here's the Loom video you would create. Here's how to show that. And then list it exactly the way that you would want to get it done, right? And then now our people are doing that, which is awesome.
That's awesome. Did you have to like have an identity, like shift or just think about yourself in like a different way to be like, yeah, I actually suck at this? How did you start to realize in yourself that you need to actually start delegating the right way?
Yeah, I think I was just really insecure, to be honest. Like, I think I was just, I felt like I should be a full stack developer. I feel like I should have really understood really the back end processes of like, if I wanted to build a micro SaaS, if I wanted to build a full SaaS application, whatever, I started to learn more front end. So I know like front end rather than back end, but still, I mean, like, I'm not, that is not my forte. Like, I know that I'm good at the growth side of things. And I just started to see, right? Like, wow, I get a lot higher leverage when I focus on these things specifically, like these three or four things. I need to do that every day and then figure out how to outsource the rest.
I didn't even realize that you were doing any engineering.
I used to build like websites awesome. And stuff for fun. And in college to like get through college and to make some extra cash to pay for college, I would build websites and
I did for the same thing. Yeah, but I did exactly. on the design side. And I had the same identity like shift of my now developer told me, he's like, I know you know how to design. I'm not telling you that you don't, but it's that you do it too slow and that I need someone that could do it faster. Right. And he's like, I need the screens that I need to develop what you need in the timeline you want it developed in. He's like, just go hire someone. Doesn't mean you can't do it, even though really, frankly, I was not nearly as good as her. He was trying to protect my ego. But like, yeah, it's just because maybe you enjoy doing it doesn't mean you're actually going to be like the best at
it. For sure. I think my biggest mistake too when I was in college was like, I was running a website development agency and I would hand off these tasks. I started offshoring work when I was probably a junior in college or sophomore in college. And I like would just send a really ambiguous, strange, like, hey, this is what I want done without really any materials, right? Without showing, hey, here are examples. Here's exactly what I would love. Here are the outcomes that I expect. Here's exactly, you know, the vision for this product, and then would just have horrible communication. And then, wow, fantastically, I would get back a horrible, horrible mock-up. It was nothing like what I wanted. And these are people, you know, I hired off of Fiverr and Upwork when I was first getting started. And I was like, well, what the heck? You know, like, this sucks. Like, you didn't do anything that I wanted, but it was my fault. And I didn't realize that. It was like, it was actually my fault. It wasn't their fault.
So how did you start like creating those briefs and SOPs? Now you have ChatGPT, now you have so many other tools, but like how at the time were you doing it, or did you figure that out? Or has this been a recent revelation?
I mean, like back then it was like everything was, I mean, we were building websites with different website builders, with custom code blocks, with literally like handwriting the code ourselves, which is like.
So yeah, it was a mess.
Yeah, it was a mess. And it was just like I remember the first like, 5-10 websites we built, I was handwriting all the copy on all of this. Like it would take me hours and hours. And it was try to be inspirational, get the brand tone, get everything. And now you can just copy and paste someone's brand brief into ChatGPT and generate all of it within 1 or 2 minutes. And then build the website in 3 or 4 hours comparatively to what it would have taken us 2 to 3 weeks. So it's just a shift. I mean, it's just you get 10x leverage now if you're using the right tools.
Yeah. A lot of the companies that we work with are small to medium business sized owners. And so I'm curious for to speak directly to them. A lot of them are individual business owners. They just work by themselves. They're maybe running a lifestyle business and this is their company. Do you still need to create SOPs if it's just you?
It depends on like, that's a very nuanced answer or question, I guess. That's a very nuanced question, but I would say that it depends on what your goal is, right? Like if you want to get your business, let's say like you're doing $1 million a year in revenue and you have like gross profit of like 20 to 30%, right? If you want to get that thing to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 million, like you are going to need processes. You're going to need the documentation just to scale, right? Like if you're hiring people to come in and help you grow the business, they need to know context. Like if you're looking at how to do a process, you need data. And the only way you can get data is through context. So yeah, but if you're good with like staying at like 1 to 2 mil and it really is just truly a lifestyle business, you're like, hey, I want to take home 200 to 400K every year personally. Like, I mean, it would be probably helpful, but again, it's if you have what you have and it's not broken, don't try to fix it, I guess.
Fair enough. Sometimes when a business owner moves out of specific parts of the day-to-day, a lot of times you have to ask yourself like, okay, what now? Like you're looking at 100 things that you need to get done. How do you figure out what the next thing is to step forward and look at?
I would say, again, it depends. depends on your goals as a company and individual. So if you are building out a product, or say that you're a small business owner, right? If I have a revenue goal and I need to understand how I can get to the phases of my roadmap within my product development, right? So like if phase one was the MVP to build it out, great, completed that. Now I've went to user feedback, started to get customers, and now I'm at a million ARR. It's like, okay, well, this means that like we need to figure out our sales, growth, marketing, and then how to still talk to users and make a better product that has more of a network effect. So your job then is like get as close to customers as possible, figure out what the growth engine is. So spend 50% on something that you know that's working and 50% on something that's more experimental so that you can have a sustained amount of growth. And then just keep testing new areas of growth, right? Like continue to say, okay, like, is it marketing within ads? Is it SEO? Is it whatever, partnerships? That'll let you know like where the leverage could be for you to get to the growth point. But it is just based on your goal. Maybe it's not a product. Maybe it's just services business. And you're also saying, okay, maybe this looks like we're at a million. Do we try to go buy another business that's similar to ours on SBA or by raising funding? Do I need to hire someone to come in and fix all my ops? It just depends, I guess.
Now, for you, obviously, you're touching the operations, but a lot of what you do day to day right now is growth, and you've done it really well, at least from what we've watched and learned from even learning from you. So I'm curious how you started iterating and testing your growth strategies, because I know a lot of business owners that are trying to figure out how the hell do I grow my marketing? And that's like the question everyone's always asking. So like, how do you go through the process of figuring out what's actually working?
Yeah, I mean, like the quick answer is data, data, data. Like you have to know what works so you can double down on it. But most small businesses, especially businesses that are doing 1 to 5 million in revenue, don't measure their data. So like they don't know if they're spending 5K a month on ads or 10K or 20K. It truly the ROI from it. You could see I'm getting now 1,000 more leads per month. That's great. But like, if you are only getting 100 book calls from that, and then you're only getting 20 people to move to trial, and then you are getting 5 people that are going to be a customer, that actually might not be the best resource of your capital, because one, like people, there's these fixed expenses and hidden expenses that people don't see, right? So like you have your man hours, you have the people that are going on these calls, they're wasting hours of their time. You have to set up the systems and processes to take in all this stuff, probably get new software. So now you have incurred software costs, all of this stuff, right? And that is not really foreseen. So it's data. You have to understand, okay, if I am measuring and testing this new area, then is it producing the ROI for us? Like a real use case is we started doing this webinar kind of strategy where we're doing 10, 20 webinars a month. And we saw our book calls like literally like triple to quadruple, right? And it's like, awesome. Like, this is great. But then we also started analyzing this data, and we're still currently analyzing this data of, wait, we're getting a lot of book calls, but these might actually not be the ideal customer for us. So we're spending $1,000, $2,000 a month on data, doing outreach, getting people to these events and running it with manpower. Then that's another $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. And now it's this big incurred expense. If we don't close like a certain amount of customers and they don't retain for X amount of time, then it actually makes no sense. So that's the data that we're looking at right now to be like, hey, okay, we're scaling that back, like increasing our cash flow to test other areas while we try to find an answer. And if the answer is like amazing, great, we can scale that up again. But right now it is not looking like that's the case. But it could be. Who knows? We'll see with our data.
Yeah, I think takeaway being iterating and using the data is such a good one. But I also think that for smaller business owners, whether you're a startup trying to grow and scale to be a massive business or someone running a lifestyle, I think either way the data matters. Even if you currently don't have access to the data, there are absolutely ways to get it and find it and track it.
I mean, yeah, you could put it in Notion and literally just copy and paste it and put it into ChatGPT and just ask. Like, do a data analysis on me if this makes sense or not.
Except, what if someone's just posting on social media and they're not getting any growth and there's no business traction from it? Because most of the time we get businesses coming to us looking for social media marketing help, and that's not necessarily a strategy, in my opinion. What's your take on just posting on social?
Social is like a long term and long tail game. So you need to be in it for the long haul. Like I post probably 20 to 30 times a month. I posted today, I got 10 likes. Yesterday, I got 10 likes. The day before that, I got 30 likes. The day before that, I got 250 likes. And right, it's just like, you know, and then all those impressions are completely varied. So like I could hit a month where I have 500,000 impressions on my LinkedIn account, and then another month where I have 50K, right? It's just like you have to keep bashing your head into a wall, and it really is a treadmill. Like you never get off. So yeah, I mean, just you have to keep going. That's it.
Yeah, no, that's great. If you could give some of the business owners listening to this something that they can actionably do and change in their business within the next 24 hours to help make them more efficient, whether it's getting out of operator mode or finding ways to automate things, what's something that they can do that's a really easy step in the right direction?
I would say, where do you have bloat? So like, where are the areas where you are spending money and time that you should not be? And the way that you can figure out what those things are is just analyzing a week. So look at what you do in a week. Literally write down everything you did in that day, right? How long was I in these meetings? What ROI did I truly get from being in these meetings and doing these tasks? And from there, at the end of the week, analyze, okay, I got the highest ROI from doing XYZ tasks. But make sure that week is jam-packed, like legit, like fill your calendar, block out time to do an assortment of different things, of data, of sales, of outreach, of partnerships, of webinars, of ops, of creating SOPs, of whatever, and say, what was the highest leverage and what was the thing that actually produced a lot for me? And what did I also enjoy doing? That's what I would say.
Thanks for doing this with us. And I appreciate you kind of sitting in the hot seat for a bit and talking with us.
This is awesome. Sweet. Thanks, Grace. Appreciate it.